splashings of country news, science fiction views, top interviews, and a clear audio muse. It's the Midweek Drive on Siren 107.3 FM.
Yes, as I said, pretty much utter madness.
Keeping up to date with Beady the Wonder Horse, Dudley, Lola, Angel, Buster, Tarka, Misty, Jess, Fizzburn, and other animals on their tour of the countryside, it's Minty Steed on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Strange enough, actually, the Minty Mobile is pretty much like driving my car when Jackie gets behind the whole sequence. There we are. Different line entirely. Minty, you're back with us, yes?
Yes, I'm back, yeah. Good. Yeah, drove into the best place with some shade, and instantaneously the line went down.
Yeah.
So I had to shoot round between my three different corners and down the avenue and back up the drive, yeah. And we've got signals.
See, there we are, North Yorkshire and Beverly Hills in California. Pretty much the same. Hollywood Hills, oh, yeah, Charlotte, yeah. Fortune. And
except
Minty from
we managed to get the signal no matter what in the end.
Well, fair point. I shall put that to Charlotte Fortune when we next meet her. Okay, yes. So this weekend it is the Cleveland Show, not Cleveland, Ohio, but the show was set up from there. Will you be making your way to Stewart Park in Middlesbrough?
Hopefully so. There's Cleveland, you know, this weekend. Then the next day we have two, which is Hubie and Sutton on Forest, New York, and then Wheaton, W-E-E-T-O-N, which is heading more or less towards your Leeds, Harwood, Arvington area, you know, the sort of in that area for Leeds, beautiful area. So we're going to hopefully try to do the two. Monday is a show day, of course. There's about five different shows on the Monday. Tuesday is Rydale show. And Wednesday is the Burraby show, which is near first. So there's quite a list of them.
Yeah, we certainly should be looking to hopefully check out a couple of those little local ones. Of course, the Cleveland show is just up the road from Siren 107.3 FM's. Oh, there we are. That sounded odd. Northern Studio that we obviously share with Southside Broadcasting. In case you're actually looking to access last night's fabulous pieces with Rachel Worby, the artistic director and former First Lady of West Virginia, and Phil Leonis from his post-San Diego routines, and, of course, Suzanne Watkins, Anna Maria Lewis, Cameron Tilbury et al., they're now online, so you can access that. Plus, as we said last night on the show, there's a special Minty tribute to the late lamented Chihuahua, whose name, of course, was Angel, who's from that perspective. So
yes,
that's online now at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Next week, Minty, in your slot, because she stepped in, and I'm sure she'll be sort of, even without you knowing about the whole thing, we've got a young lady called Kate from Showing Time Tailoring. What should Ed and indeed the Pro Vice Chancellor Scott Davison, who's also joining us on the show next week, what should they know about Kate from Showing Time Tailoring?
Well, for a very up-to-date matter, Kate has for quite some many years now made the special brow bands that go on the horse's bridle for a rocking horse company that's virtually next door to her every time they've sent a rocking horse for a royal baby.
Yeah.
So that's an up-to-date item.
Very good.
And, yes, so she is awaiting...
But will, of course, this new contemporary relationship actually go for a rocking horse baby, or indeed a rocking horse for the baby? Did you have a rocking horse, Ed?
Yeah, we did. We certainly did. I can remember having one, yeah.
Oh, you did. Oh, good. That's all right. I had a tricycle, but there we are.
I have one of those as well.
I swelled. There
you go. Yes, yeah, so it's a whole... Clearly, that's another sort of part of my psyche which probably needs lots of sort of debate in various other bits and pieces.
Yes,
okay, so weather-wise, we're continuing in what is pretty much a spectacular summer, but did you cope with some of the slightly noisy thunderstorms, and how were the pets in terms of the recent sort of strange tropical monsoon-like weather we've been having?
Well, we had full notice of every change in the weather, especially thunder, etc., within 100 miles, because Fizz, in particular, absolutely, she's the first weather warner. And I knew it was coming 24 hours before that, because Hayden, whom you have featured for beer festivals and railway journeys, his dog started 24 hours before ours, so he said, you'll have the storms in 24 hours, and certainly we did, yes. So we've all got our own weather warning system going.
Very good. You see, this is what we need. We obviously need to set the dogs on the case. Weather warning, 24 hours ahead, care of Hayden's dog. It's fantastic.
Yes, definitely. And then we have the warning starting with ours, so we knew it certainly wasn't. They were barking at some strange happening. It was definitely the thunder was coming. So, yeah, if you want to know about thunder and lightning, have a dog, it will soon tell you.
All together, absolutely. Oh. Now, a quick thing which we need to put to you, a recent feature in the Daily Mail, Minty. David Gower, former cricketer, of course, directed a furious broadside at Britain's townies recently, and indeed he's actually arguing that townies should take an exam in rural affairs, and if they fail it on two occasions, they should lose the right to vote. I'm not sure whether his tongue was in his cheek with respect to this, but the 56-year-old said the rural economy has kept many employed happy and healthy for a long time. He lives in the country and finds it irritating when issues that affect it are decided by city dwellers, many of whom love tarmac, are allergic to grass, and find it hard to understand where Morris dancing comes from. Any thoughts on cricketer David Gower's thoughts there?
Well, apart from saying they shouldn't be allowed to vote, because after all, so many people don't bother to vote, and that would perturb many people. Really, he's on the right team, because what do we do? What do I always try to make known and do every Thursday or whenever I'm on air, that the countryside is not some separate entity that has nothing to do with the rest of any country anywhere. Mm. I mean, it's a vital part. Without the countryside, there really is nothing else about, other than if you're going to end up like somewhere like Hong Kong or anything, where they have to have artificial grass and things put down. And we are the oxygen of the countryside, is the oxygen for the rest of the country, and many other things besides. Well, and we're not a foreign species, just sort of out there somewhere, nothing to do with other people.
Well, so, I don't know about that. In terms of exciting things that you possibly, if you haven't been accessing our podcasts, realise, or indeed listening to the Cone Zone show, Drive Time on Monday with Ed Wellman, you may not know what Ed was actually doing last Saturday. Would you like to hazard a guess, Minty?
Oh, well, knowing Ed, he'll have done it very well to his best, no matter what he was doing.
I did try, but success was limited in my endeavours.
You seized the day.
It's the endeavour, Ed, it's the endeavour. Not so much the matter of the success or the succeeding, it's the effort put into the endeavour. And if you try your best, you can ask no more of anyone.
Well, Minty, I don't think that we could put the word endeavour onto anyone more worthy than yourself, actually. But what I was doing last Saturday, I was having a fishing lesson at the CLA Game Fair in Warwickshire, and I was attempting to catch a carp, which I didn't manage to do, but I enjoyed my lesson.
A six-year-old from Poland did, of course, but there we are. That's
well, I didn't.
Just goes to show.
I would suggest you take up fly fishing, Ed, then you don't have to be concerned about whether you catch a carp or not. And you can do very well, and it's a matter of doing the fly fishing and getting the fly, which is attached to your modern line, of course, right into whatever circle or whatever object there is in the water. And if you have a go at that, the next country fair, and there is a big game fair towards the end of everything at Chatsworth, and also the two of the massive ones not too far away from Lincoln. That round up the end of the game fair shortly.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see on that. It's a thought. Last two questions for Minty at present, please. Ed.
Minty, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
It was, especially trying to find a signal at the same time.
congratulations for that. And can we look forward to connecting with you
two weeks. Yeah, fortnight a day, Minty will be back in full force. I'll probably sort of do a few other bits and pieces.
Yeah, and I do expect to be down in August, do I not? Which, of course, I can come on either date.
Well, you see, there we are, the royal visit, the genuine royal visit. So we'll be blessed with the mintinessness in the studio. Yes, I think we're talking probably August the 8th for that. So she might actually, for nice night, she might see you for the whole show. It's added bonus time.
Yeah, and whether we can say it's been well and truly minted, can't we?
Thank you.
Indeed.
Like a big, bold bird braving the battlements of broadcasting, it's the Midweek Drive Time on Siren 107.3 FM.
Or maybe Stork, actually. Big, bold bird, Stork. Anyway, what better way to actually introduce Richard Fitzwilliams than with Queen? And I'm going slightly mad. With nigh on 60-odd interviews the last couple of days, Richard, I would have thought you might be going slightly bananas.
Well, I've enjoyed it very much, and I mean, I think it has touches of drama and theatre, and of course, a joyous event. I mean, I thought that William and Kate looked so happy, and I think that obviously it's been a tremendously emotional time for them. There's no question that it's pretty daunting when you've got something like 200.
Do you think we should have actually had video cameras in the actual birthing area as well, just to sort of carry the whole reality television thing a stage further?
There's a thought, may I suggest, that for the next child, because I think there almost certainly will be one.
It's an heir and a spare, Richard. Let's face it, an heir and a spare. That's the official line we're often told.
Well, what we need is a new cliché, said Sam Goldwyn.
Yeah, well, it's... I mean, I was commenting on the fabulous Rod Whiting show. There, I've mentioned it, even though he's on BBC Lincolnshire. Fantastic, Sol. Who is doing the lunchtime slot, and he invited me to share my thoughts as an academic on the media coverage of the birth of, obviously, the Prince of Cambridge, Prince George, as we know now. I can understand why it was that. I mean, I kind of came down on the fact that, well, it was positive news, it's new life, it's a celebration of that, although I must admit I did feel that at times it was a little OTT, and if memory serves, although there was great excitement at the birth of Prince William back in the 80s, 1982, I had a feeling that it wasn't quite to this ridiculous level. Is that just down to the fact that we have 24-hour rolling news now, and somehow, doesn't matter if you can wheel out a midwife person or anybody who can actually utter utterances and speculate on the speculation of the speculation about the speculation, then that's essential.
Yes, of course it is. But, I mean, it's the nature of things that have changed in 30 years. Good heavens, I mean, that's the pre-internet age. You know, the pre-Twitter age. I mean, it's hard sometimes for us to remember.
There was an age before Twitter?
Well, do you know that when I edited the International Who's Who, we were using something called hot metal.
Good heavens.
That's, I mean,
I bet they never taught you about that. You know,
it's impossible. No, I think that it what tends to happen. I mean, this has been happening for years. A story becomes obsessive, and once that's the case, it literally appears to consume a huge amount of time. Sometimes not a great deal is happening, but of course, anticipation is building up, and hence the fact the camera has to be placed with. Firmly at the door of the hospital when they're expected to appear and all the rest of it. I mean, yes, you can. It's very easy to say this is way over the top. The whole point is it's a very, very important story, and if it wasn't, you wouldn't have had coverage, global coverage from the United States. I mean, it was absolutely extraordinary, not to mention Asia, everywhere.
Do you not think it would have been better if they'd called him Prince of Massachusetts? I mean, that would have actually got the American market in the first place, as well as beginning to win back the colonies, perhaps.
I was thinking that you had ideas that, you know, recolonization. I mean, I think the names made total sense, and I think we knew it was going to be George. It became the favourite. James was an odd first runner because the first King James, although obviously uniting the kingdoms of England and Scotland, was not a prepossessing figure. The second, well, he left in ignominy in 1688, and I never saw why James was so heavily tipped. Charles, yes, Philip, yes, I thought there'd be four names.
Bond, it was after James Bond, that was the line, I think, it was probably actually up there. I thought Aristotle was my bet, but obviously no chance there whatsoever, but still...
Well, you didn't lobby hard enough.
Clearly, this is the whole message on the whole sequence. It's always difficult to do predictions. I mean, one of the suggestions which passed my mind was the thought that when, and possibly if, but let's say when, the Prince of Cambridge actually comes to ascend to the throne, probably the vast majority of folk, including, dare I say it, ourselves, will have actually moved on from this mortal coil and be elsewhere, which I thought was quite interesting.
Well, you might shuffle off from it, sir. Very cleverly put, I have to say. Yes, I suppose, based on the longevity of our current monarch, I mean, heaven knows when
Prince Charles will ascend to the throne, let alone Prince William, you know, dear me.
Well, I mean, again, that is obviously it's a matter that nobody knows, but to have three generations alive. I mean, that hasn't in succession, that hasn't happened since 1894 with Edward VIII, and thank goodness he never succeeded. Selfish, dubious politically, he'd have been appalling.
Yeah, you see, there we have it. No mincing around with respect to words on that particular occasion.
Well, look at the King's speech. I mean, one of the reasons I think George was chosen, of course it was to tribute to the Queen's father, but there's also this importance, and this is what William and Kay are all stressing, the insofar as it's humanly possible they want to get a certain amount of normality into proceedings. Of course, for an heir to the throne, there are limits to this, but it is being tried. When people think of George VI, obviously the older generation, and obviously, again, to remember it, you do have to be old, thinking back pre-war days, the abdication, subsequently the war, wartime head of state and so forth, and his reputation subsequently. But the King's speech, now, I mean, that was seen by millions. It was a huge hit, Colin Firth won an Oscar and so forth, and it was a superb and moving film, and a new generation will appreciate what he went through to do what he did. And I think that was pivotal also to the choice, because it is important that the traditions are continued with names. I mean, you're never going to get a weird name, a sort of Zara or its equivalent, male equivalent. Of course not.
What's weird about Zara? Yeah, Lord.
Who else is called Zara? I can't think of anybody.
Well, I'm sure there must be various superheroes who got sort of Zara. And
I was challenging you. I knew you wouldn't know because I've never heard of
Well, we'll get on the case. I'm sure we can actually sort of Xena, warrior princess. That's close to Zara, you know. Anyway,
quite close.
Yeah. Oh, Ed, I know you were very impressed with the fact that we had the naming of George Gal. In fact, quite literally, George Arthur Louis. Louis, of course, Mountbatten resonates throughout the family, as indeed it has in lots of ways. No Charles. I thought that was a possibility. But anyway, your thoughts, Ed.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised, Richard, by the coverage that this got, because let's face it, William and Kate are Britain's best loved couple, aren't they?
Well, there's absolutely no doubt about it. I mean, our monarchy is the world's most high profile. They are the most glamorous royals, and there's no doubt they're tremendously loved, both here and abroad. So not to cover it in the way that it was covered. I mean, the fact that people were being interviewed who didn't know what was happening, well, how could they say, even if they did know? The whole point was to keep a sense of theatre, a sense of anticipation. Of course, there was the moment, and they didn't carry this through. The whole idea was a royal official would go escorted by police to the forecourt of Buckingham Palace, where we'd see for the first time on an easel the sex of the baby, and they decided, because of, obviously, a fear of Twitter, and also cognizant of the fact that papers needed to know for the morning editions, to release it by press release, and I think that was wise.
And how did you, what did you make even of the parents? Because I thought it was lovely seeing Carol Middleton and husband, and then Charles and Camilla. When they emerged from the hospital, they looked terribly relaxed, and it wasn't kind of over rehearsed. They were very natural, I think, at that point.
Yes, I mean, I think they were as natural as you could expect. I mean, I think William and Kate looked natural because obviously that what they were going to say was going to be limited with reference to the name and so on. The whole idea was that the focus would be on the young prince, and it was. And it's a pretty fearsome thing. I mean, Diana found the assembled press pack pretty terrifying. Remember that she had William 10 days early, so when she first went into labour, there were only, I gather, a very few cameras there. That's the reason for the big camp out for the last 3 or so weeks. I mean, no question that the media were determined not to miss it this time.
And, of course, we did have a notion of birth, which was induced to ensure that Charles, according to Andrew Morton at least, didn't actually miss his polo appointment. But that's another issue entirely still. Life continues. Sir Richard, let's move away from the royal baby news. I'm sure we'll have time to look forward to his first day at prep school and indeed his first water slide down a theme park to attend as the years pass by, plus, of course, his university stuff and good material in every sense of the word. But let's move into the world of the movies. And,
may I mention a very interesting statistic that came out yesterday? This is the British Film Institute statistic, and certainly surprised me. the idea that had always been current for so many years that it's the 15 to 24-year-old age group more or less determine most of what we see. Certainly the blockbusters are aimed at that audience. And here it says that in Britain, in the last year, older viewers were 36% of total cinema audiences. That's over 45s. Now, that really, I think, is very interesting.
Well, it's one of the reasons I may be checking out The Wolverine in the next day or so. But that's a different line entirely.
Clearly, definitely.
As I'm just past 24, I probably just break that slightly.
You're in touch with your inner child.
One has to be. I'm not just in touch. I like to feel I embrace my inner child and say hello on a regular basis.
I'm glad to hear it.
So what have you been viewing recently where you would tend to say, yes, that deserves at least one thumb up?
Well, our stories we tell. This is, if you want to see an engrossing documentary about a family, I would recommend Sarah Polley's Stories We Tell, because she made Away From Her with Julie Christie and also Take This Waltz, and both I thought extremely good. But I'd never seen anything quite like this, because this is the way she looks back at her mother. It's a tribute, you could say, to her parents. Her mother, Diane, died of cancer when she was 11. What sort of life did Diane have? And her father, rather taciturn, a failed thespian. Her mother was a singer and an actress and highly regarded. Nonetheless, her father is looking back, too, at the story. And full of surprises, this, because when you look back and you have your siblings and friends of your late mother participating, what can be unearthed? No spoilers from me, because though some reviews have given the plot of this, it's the way it's told that's so fascinating. There's a certain drama to that, because we hear from, for example, thespian friends of Diane's, and the way those stories develop will surprise you, and indeed it's so beautifully done. This is one of the gems. Sarah Polley is a Canadian director, and I was absolutely fascinated by it, because a lot of the tips contain views. Their views don't always agree, but the mother was unconventional, and it's a riveting story. She left children by her first family. She lost custody of them, which was almost pretty well unique in Canada at that time when she left home.
And it's already picked up the Ted Rogers Best Feature-Length Documentary Award. I don't suspect that's the R.R. Ted Rogers, but interesting there that, yes, initially released last year, of course, October the 12th, 2012. Sarah Polley's...
They waited for the American release to get it in line for the Oscars, and don't rule it out.
Stories We Tell.
Stories We Tell, where she has told, I think, absolutely superbly. But the second documentary, I mean, this really does almost defy description.
Stories We Tell, of course, from Skegness. There's a dinosaur story, is there not, Ed?
Jeff's just come legging it down three flights of stairs.
Very excited.
Because
very excited.
There's a Skegosaurus on the loose, and you are so not to approach. Skegosaurus
is on the loose in Skegness. Just wanted to raise that piece of public service broadcasting here on Siren 107.3 FM's Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Well,
it's true. It's about time. I see what you did there. Nice Paleolithic line there. Okay, so Stories We Tell, very much sort of puts to the fore there. No mention of Wolverine, obviously. Where are you going next?
We're going next to something that's absolutely horrible. But it occurred in the 1960s when General Suharto's regime overthrew the leftish regime of President Sukarno. I was unaware that subsequently some half a million to a million communists or communist sympathizers and sometimes Chinese were murdered by the new regime. It is an extraordinary and dreadful story, but The Act of Killing is a film where Joshua Oppenheimer has directed. And this is unlike anything you've ever seen before. He is allowed to visit Indonesia and interview the gangsters that the army used to do these appalling killings. we meet several of them, and what is absolutely grotesque, it's positively ghoulish, is firstly the fact that the government still, through its right-wing youth organization called Pan Consilla, appears to boast about the killings in the 60s, and secondly, the way some of the gangsters actually reenact for the cameras how they committed these dreadful murders.
I mean, this is one of the things which I find ethically quite dubious, because it's all very well doing kind of dramatisation, as indeed Heinguessing Gore and the Killing Fields manifested with Roland Joffé's fabulous screenplay in the 80s.
Very
but when you've actually got a situation like this, and you've actually got the people who perpetrated the crimes reenacting those crimes, I don't know, Ed, I just feel like a little bit awkward about that.
I feel a little uneasy with the idea myself.
I can only say that it is an insight into the human condition which was decidedly horrible, brings what occurred to the fore. And if there's been the most grotesque violation of human rights, which is, putting it mildly, I mean, for example, somebody, too much blood, they've been killing so many, much better to do it strangling them with wire. But what happens when he actually reenacts it, when it's being done to him? Does that alter his perception of the past? I mean, this is a movie. It lasts, I have to say, for 2 hours, 40 minutes. It shows how some of these appalling people were influenced by gangster, Western, and musical genres. I mean, it's almost as though they felt they were reenacting some form of Hollywood film. They could do exactly what they liked.
It left Mark Kermode dumbfounded.
Yes, he was. In fact, he said that certain hardened critics had found it difficult to stay the distance.
Okay, so clearly in the documentary genre today of cine verite, after a fashion, it's not even cine verite, that's been a new term that needs to be coined by Kaidi Cinema to actually develop this phenomenon, which many people actually argue kind of goes back, obviously, way, way back to the 1920s and the notion of Nanook the North and the early documentary filmmakers like Robert Flaherty, but possibly from recent generations, I suspect, probably Fahrenheit 9-1-1, Michael Moore and various other sort of areas slots into that place, but two fascinating little areas of stories we tell, which is a slightly gentle but nonetheless sort of quite pertinent take on the whole experience of life from a Canadian perspective, and as you mentioned there, the act of killing. It's extraordinary. What an interesting juxtaposition with respect to, obviously, the celebratory birth of the Prince of Cambridge, of course, the fabulous Prince Henry, of which, of course, it was said by the Northern Echo that it was congratulations by the Northern Echo journalistic team to the Duchess of Cornwall for giving birth. I don't think so. Bit of an error there, but never mind.
Might have been Prince George as well.
I know there are miracles happening, but that's, yeah. you know.
On the subject of miracles, how about a magic mushroom?
What? Now, you know, is that an offer? In which case, we'd have to decline, make our excuses, and leave. But anyway, yes.
Just simply enables a mention, and a brief mention, of a field in England. I mention it firstly because this is the first film that has been synonymous with its cinema release. It's been released on television, free television, and also DVD. So those who want to check it out, it's directed by Ben Wheatley, who did Sightseers, which was a hilarious black comedy, and it's set in the English Civil War, and, well, men are fleeing a conflict, and after a battle, joins a couple of others, and then a fourth man. They even run into a fifth who appears to be a satanic figure in search of treasure. It's set in this particular field, and after they've had magic mushrooms, anything and everything can happen. Now, if this works for you, fair enough. There's no doubt at all that if you believe it is a masterpiece, and this is a sort of art house film that some critics like, the Telegraph gave it 5 stars. I mean, a psychedelic trip into magic and madness, I quote. There are those of us for whom this didn't work, for all the strange, weird cutting and the scatological moments and the drunken camera moves and whatever else. I got very, very impatient with a movie that didn't make any sense. It didn't have a logical story. It depended whether or not you link up with the way the story is being told. The story was told to generally admiring reviewers, my bet is that practically nobody will see it. And those that do, who don't know what they're going to see, may get as impatient as I did, because what occurs is simply crazy.
I think you've made that point there quite clear. So no mention of four Despicable Me 2 or indeed Wolverine. That might sort of come in all sorts of ways, but an interesting line there. Quite a good range there. Ed, last two questions for Richard Fitzwilliams before, of course, looking ahead to 7 days from now. We're joined by Pro Vice Chancellor Scott Davidson, who might be quite interested to sort of share some thoughts with Richard. Anyway, over to you, Ed.
Richard, what I'd really like to ask you this morning is, would you like a coffee? Because I think you've certainly earned one. But that will have to wait for another time. But in the meantime,
Coca-Cola is what is sustaining.
Other brands' drinks are available.
Oh, right. Okay, very
and,
Jeff Thompson.
You know, that's it is. Does he have a banana as well? Do you think?
I think it's Diet Coke and
Definitely,
banana.
Definitely, definitely not. Yeah. I am not called Miller Band.
Nice. Yeah.
Indeed, you're not. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Indeed, I've had a very entertaining link.
Ian Lennox is coming up next, but that other question needs to be:
can we look forward to connecting with you again soon, please, Richard?
I certainly hope so. We must discuss movies including, for example, The End of the World.
And for the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge and, of course, the fabulous new edition, of course, who would be Prince George.
Hey, girls. Hey, boys. Superstar DJs. Here we go.